Okay, I am set. Did you want me to do roll call?
Yeah, if you could do roll call, and I'll just 2:23. We're back into open session.
Okay.
And we're going to do roll call.
Okay. Dr. Sadlick?
Here.
Dr. Popiel?
Here.
Ms. Tibbetts?
Here.
Dr. Campbell?
Here.
Dr. Spatt?
Present.
Dr. Rubin?
Present.
We have quorum.
All right. So we're still on Dr. Hampton's case and looking for some ideas, motions, et cetera, that we could get into play.
Mr. Chairman, this is Dr. Campbell. I'd like to make a motion.
Go ahead, Dr. Campbell.
Rep. 1-188. I would like to make a motion to direct board staff to reach out and contact Dr. Eric Hampton and to request he complete and submit an affidavit to the board permanently retiring his medical license under Arizona Revised Statute 32-1528-32-1528. And in the event of his refusal to offer Dr. Hampton a consent agreement, limiting his ability to practice medicine, and in the event of his refusal of full, asking board staff to call an emergency meeting of the board to move forward with alternative remedies.
And I'll go ahead and second that motion. That was well stated, Dr. Campbell.
And just one more thing, Dr. Campbell, just to clarify, the emergency meeting, you said in the event of refusal of both, I just wanted to make sure, so in ARS 32-1528, after the, if in the event that he does present the affidavit for permanent retirement to the board will need to make a decision to waive the annual renewal fee. At that point, it will be effectively retired. So did you want to also add that the board, if he does submit the affidavit, that the board hold a special meeting to make that decision based on the affidavit?
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Okay. Got it.
Dr. Motion made, Dr. Campbell made the motion. I seconded. Any other discussion? Dr. Rubin?
No discussion for me, thank you.
Dr. Spatt?
I didn't want anything to add, thank you.
Okay. Dr. Campbell made the motion. Ms. Gallen's not with us. Ms. Tibbetts?
No more comment.
Okay. Dr. Popiel?
Nothing to add.
Okay. So, Gail, could you do a formal roll call then?
Yes. Please. Dr. Sadlick?
Aye.
Dr. Popiel?
Aye.
Ms. Tibbetts?
Aye.
Dr. Campbell?
Aye.
Dr. Spatt?
Aye.
Dr. Rubin?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Thank you. Let's move on to number 6, review, consideration, possible action regarding potential board case This is with Dr. Sheldon Deal. Has everyone had a chance to look at his prior consent agreement that he signed? That was a while back.
Yes. Yeah.
What was your thought process?
Okay, this is Dr. Ruben Holtman. I'm getting right to my notes.
Okay.
Oh, okay. Hold on. You know what? I'm not sure. Let me give me a minute to get that on my screen. I have my notes on the screen. Okay. Sorry, my computer's just a little slow. In the consent agreement, findings of fact. On what page? Stay with me. Okay, page 6, line 6.
Wait. Mr. Chair, members of the board, I apologize. Dr. Rubin, I think you might have moved to the next agenda item, which is reviewing the consent agreement for Dr. Porter. I believe what Dr. Rubin was referring to was agenda item 6, which is the board's decision whether or not to open a case based on Dr. Sheldon Deal's consent agreement.
Correct. And I'm looking at that consent agreement, and I have a question about
it. Oh, I see.
Which is on page, that's okay, which is on page 6, line 6.
Page 6, line 6, on the item number 1, permanent restriction.
Yeah, it's highlighted. It's highlighted.
Yeah. I got it.
Go okay, ahead. So starting on line 5 to line 7, it says, order 1, permanent restriction, respondent's license is immediately and permanently restricted from dispensing all forms of hormone replacement therapy by any means or method of administration. The way I read that is that he can't dispense it, doesn't mean he can't prescribe it. And that was where my question lies. And whether, if that's true, then if he didn't dispense the oxandrolone, and just indeed prescribed it, then it doesn't seem like we would need to open a board case. Unless somewhere I'm reading something wrong.
You read it verbatim. Let's move it to generalized discussion, board members. Can I start? Dr. Popiel, can I start with you? I think
sure.
This was part of the, a couple years ago we did this.
Yep. Dr. Deal has what I would deem very limited knowledge of hormone replacement and bases his dosing on muscle testing. The dose of hormones that he gave this elderly woman was utterly egregious in nature, and he deserves no ability to prescribe any hormone replacement of any sort. So I appreciate you bringing that to our point, Dr. Rubin, because in my opinion, this doctor does not need to be prescribing hormones of any sort to anybody. And absolutely, I would want a board case opened and to discuss this and bring this to light. And in my opinion, restrict him from prescribing hormones of any sort ever.
I agree with you, Dr. Papil. Dr. Rubin, I see your point. And I suppose that, and that would be up to Mr. Larson, but that word dispensing, prescribing, it's all within, you know, that context. So I would like to visit with him, as Dr. Papil mentioned, and find out what he's confused about.
And even if this does exist, where there's a, you know, splitting of hairs based on dispensing versus prescribing, I can guarantee you he has no business prescribing oxandrolone in his practice. In my opinion, I would be absolutely shocked if he has a chronic kidney disease patient who has muscle wasting that he's prescribing this for.
I agree.
And Mr. Chair, members, I would just, you know, remind the board that this is, we're all we're doing here is deciding whether to open a case. So, you know, regardless of whether there is, you know, a legal distinction between prescribing and dispensing. You know, this, we don't have to address that today. It's just a question of whether we should open an investigation based on the information.
Dr. Sedlak, this is Dr. Rubin. May I make a motion?
Yes, sir.
This is Dr. Rubin. I make a motion to open a case against Dr. Sheldon Deal regarding what we just discussed in open session regarding the use of oxandrolone in his practice and other therapies.
Okay. Dr. Rubin made the motion. I'll need a second, then we'll need Ms. Anthony.
This is Dr. Popiel. I'll second the motion.
Okay. We got the second, and then Ms. Anthony, can you go ahead and do roll call for us?
Yes. Dr. Sedlak?
Aye.
Dr. Popiel?
Aye.
Ms. Tibbetts?
Aye.
Dr. Campbell?
Aye.
Dr. Spatt?
Aye.
Dr. Rubin?
Aye.
And motion carries.
Okay, we'll move on to number seven, review consideration and possible action regarding draft consent agreement. This is for, has everyone read the Jason Porter draft consent?
Dr. Sedlak, this is Dr. Rubin. I just want to, for the record, once again, mark my recusal from this.
Okay.
Thank you, Dr. Rubin.
Is there anything we want to add to this? There was 6 months of, in that consent agreement, there was 6 months of non-prescribing control.
Mr. Chair, members of the board, my apologies, this is Justin. I just wanted to quickly just remind the board what we're here to do is just to first, the board needs to make a motion to adopt the findings of fact and conclusions of law portion of the consent agreement. And then at that point, the board can start to deliberate on the prospective disciplinary order to be included in that consent agreement. And then, you know, after that, there can be a separate motion on the disciplinary portion, and once the board has agreed or to adopt or the consent agreement as a whole, we can make a motion to offer it to Dr. Porter, and then and if not accepted, continue the formal interview to the next meeting. So there are certain steps that we want to go through here, but we want to get the findings of fact and conclusions of law portion agreed upon before we start to deliberate about the disciplinary order.
Is everyone in agreement with the findings of fact and conclusions of law? Let's start there, like Mr. Larson suggested. This is Jason Porter, case number 20168.
This is Dr. Campbell. I can make a motion.
Okay. Are you good with the findings, the facts, and the conclusions the way that's been written up?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Is there any other findings? Is there anything else with the findings of facts that we need to discuss as a board? Findings of facts, exclusions of law. Okay, so we got that. I guess are we in agreement on that part of it?
Yes.
Okay, so is there anything that in terms of disciplinary we want to add?
Mr. Chair, members of the board, I would do a separate vote to adopt the findings of fact and conclusions of law in the consent agreement.
Okay. So I will make the motion that findings of facts, conclusions of law. I'll go ahead and make a motion that we agree with that portion.
Dr. Popiel, second that motion.
And Gail, we'll probably need roll on that.
Yes, please. Dr. Sedlak?
Aye.
Dr. Popiel?
Aye.
Ms. Tibbetts?
Aye.
Dr. Campbell?
Aye.
Dr. Spatt?
Aye.
Dr. Rubin?
He's recused.
Oh, I'm sorry. Motion carries.
Okay, then let's look at the second part, which was the disciplinary action for that consent agreement. Are the board members happy with that? Has there been more discussion do we need to have with the disciplinary action part of it? The only thing that, and Gail may have put it there, that I didn't see is this is the second time we've had problems. Actually, yeah, the second time, and maybe the third, that we've had issues with the out-of-scope prescribing. So if we only limit him to 6 months, then I would ask board staff, we could put that possibly, it's up to Mr. Larson, put that in the consent agreement, basically that he also has 6 months of somehow monitoring the PMP since this issue has been prevalent.
Oh, wait.
This is Dr. Popiel. I definitely would like to see that as well, Dr. Sadek.
Okay.
This is Dr. Campbell. So if I understand you correctly, we're thinking about perhaps the first 6 months he doesn't get to write any prescriptions for opioids or any prescriptions at all. I'd like to clarify that. And then maybe the second 6 months, he would have to have a naturopathic physician that's in good standing and licensed with this board sign off on his or what are we thinking?
Yeah, I'm thinking, Dr. Campbell, for the last of the 6 months, the first 6 months he can't do it, you know, period. And board staff, you know, obviously we're checked, but then I'd like to say the next 6 months that, and I realize it's work for board staff, but that he is monitored monthly, that he does not, you know, get back into his old habits.
That's what I understand. So the first 6 months he can't do anything, and they're suggesting during the second 6 months there's monitoring.
No, I think they're suggesting that we monitor him during the first 6 months.
Okay. I forget, does he share the practice with any other naturopath?
Yes, he does.
Does he?
Okay.
I can't remember her name, but it's another physician naturopath.
Do you guys think that? I mean, I don't know what exactly would entail, but what about if we put the work back on them, where his colleague would have to, essentially do the prescribing for him? You know, they would have to, you know, work together, or she'd have to sign off on it or concur on it or write the script herself for him, or, you know, something that puts the work back on him and his office. You know, it really makes that second 6 months learning experience and a pain, and, you know, and they can discuss things and hopefully learn from each other. And then we do another 6 months after that of probation, or, you know, some of these guys think it would work.
Is it just the CME?
So are you saying leave it at the 6th? Obviously, he can't write it. And then for the next 6, that he has sort of a co-signer on those particular medications?
Yeah, exactly. You know, this another license. A physician in good standing with the board would need to co-sign, you know, any, you know, scripts. And if you guys, I don't know if you want to say every script or just opioids and barbiturates or however you'd like to do that, you know, and then that way he has an additional 6 months, you know, being under the thumb of the board. And if anything comes up, over prescribing, not checking the monitoring program, you know, things of that nature, then got another 6 months just to make sure that he's crossing the T's and dotting the I's.
And maybe it could be phrased under as C2, C3 cosign for the next 6 months. It would be up to board staff in terms of the how much work that would be and whether it would be able to be accomplished.
I guess under an honor system, right, that second 6 months, yeah. We mandate any C2 and C3, any scripts falling in that category are co-signed, and whether or not they're going to know that we're going to maybe review 5 files or something like that 3 months in, just to see what we find, or if we're just going to sit back and say if anybody complains, then we'll drop the hammer then.
No, I like the first part of what you mentioned, and that would be how they co-sign C2, C3, and it could be randomly pulled and checked. If that colleague, we'd probably have to think it one notch further. If that colleague leaves, then it would be up to him to find a position in good board standing on whatever board it is to have co-signing on C2, C3.
Very good.
Dr. Sadlak, members of the board, if I may, just a couple things I'd like to point out. When and if Dr. Porter signs this consent agreement, and I sign it, the restriction goes into play regarding the prescription. And just know also that typically I do pull PMPs from time to time. You could just simply direct board staff to pull a PMP every 3 weeks, every month, just to make sure he's not prescribing during that time frame. And then also DEA and pharmacy board are also notified that he has a restriction regarding his prescribing on his license at that point. So they have that time frame too, that they understand that there's a restriction, so it's sort of flagged if anything comes up. If I'm understanding the discussion, then you're talking about the 6 months after that, and you're talking about having somebody sign off on prescriptions, possibly being written by the respondent and having somebody signed off on it. I believe that would take a agreement with another physician. And then in looking at the PMP, there would still be no way for me to know who wrote that and who signed off, because it's just going to be under a physician's name. So I think that particular area is going to be a little bit problematic.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was thinking. Maybe in the consent agreement, then you could state that, we have a couple choices. I'm just trying to make sure that we don't have to revisit this again. We know we have the 6 months, unless we want to extend the 6 months and just make it 8 months or a year. That'd be one possibility. Or the 6 months, and then stated in the consent agreement so that he is aware that there will be monthly PMPs run on him.
To clarify, the first 6 months, was that just C2 and C3, or is that everything, including Flintstone vitamins?
It was C2, C3, so it was benzodiazepines. It was any C2 that we're allowed to write, and barbiturates. So it encased C3.
I see. Okay. No, I was just saying, if it was everything, any prescription for the first 6 months, then we could, do limited to the C2 and C3 for the second portion, allowing him to write for the other scripts thereafter. And like you said, have the monitoring that he would, know that we were monitoring it every month or whatever.
Okay.
And that
Dr. Sadlick, members of the board, if I may, this is under page 6, number 2 of the order. It reads, during the first 6 months of probation, respondent's license is restricted and he shall not prescribe any Schedule II controlled substances or any of the following controlled substances, including substance precursors, and that includes phentermine or any other stimulant or weight control medication that is a controlled substance, benzodiazepine, such as alprazolam, or any other sedative or barbiturate that is a controlled substance, and ketamine in all forms. So I suggest that if the board is very concerned about this, the prescribing, perhaps they may want to change the first 6 months to the term of probation, which is 12 months.
Okay. So keep the same restrictions, just move it to 12 months and have. Okay, very good. What do you think about that, Dr. Sadler?
I think it'd be the easiest for board staff, and it'd be the most clean way of doing it. But, you know, the other prescribing docs, Dr. Spatt, Dr. Papil, your input would be great.
So you're thinking at this point just extend the restrictions to 12 months from 6 right now?
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to make it simple for a board staff, because that's otherwise a lot of monitoring.
Well, I agree. I mean, you're right. This is the second time down the out-of-scope prescriptions. We have prescribing to family members. So, you know, that may be easiest just to extend that to a year instead.
Okay. All right. Dr. Spatt?
I don't have anything to add. Thank you.
And then let me guess, Ms. Tibbetts.
I agree with changing it to a year.
Okay. Dr. Campbell, did you have anything more to add to it?
No, if we're going to move it to 12 months, then I believe, Ms. Anthony, did you say that in a case like this, you would be doing regular spot checks through the prescription database, or you do it regularly?
Yes, I can certainly do that. But if I'm going to change, per your request, if I'm going to change the term of the restriction to 12 months, I can certainly add in language that relates to that it will be monitored per monthly CSPMP reports. And again, this is reported to the DEA and the pharmacy board as well.
Okay. Does that pose any burden upon your office to add that language, or should we just leave the 12 months and with all the other agencies involved, we're confident that it will be recognized if there's any issues?
That's correct. It's really no burden to change the language, as long as we're all clear on what we want to change it to. And then my other question would be, do you want me to change the language based on conversation we have here and bring it back for your approval, or do you want to form a motion specifying what needs to be changed and then just forward it on for signature?
Which could be easier, Mr. Larson and Ms. Anthony?
Mr. Chair, members, Justin, I think it sounds like the board has provided very clear direction as to what it needs to change in the consent agreement. So I think what we could do is just I think it would probably be easier, and we wouldn't need to come back again next month and review this again if the one of the board members could just make a motion to modify the consent agreement, changing the restriction period from 6 months to 12 months, and adding language that Ms. Anthony will, that board staff will monitor the CSPMP on a monthly basis. And with that modification, the board could adopt the disciplinary order in the consent agreement and vote on and move to offer the consent agreement to Dr. Porter. And if not signed, continue, if not signed with, you know, whatever period of time the board wants to give, you know, 20 days, 25 days, I don't know, enough time to, for us to decide whether we want to continue the formal interview, put it on the agenda for continuing the formal interview.
So really just modify the portion of the consent agreement from 6 months to 12 months. The board really wouldn't necessarily, would we need to have that back in September, or could we just allow board staff to get that signed?
No, the latter is correct. You could just direct board staff to make that change in this draft consent agreement and offer it as amended by the board. And if not signed within, you know, whatever period of time, then continue the formal interview. So then the board could instead do this via its own order rather than a consent agreement.
Any more discussion on it? No. And then Gail, is your calendar the next, it was September, I know, but then is it October? Probably that 15th, the second Thursday. You know,
Pam? Are you talking about the next board meeting?
Yeah, that's September. But then on the consent agreement, giving them, because we'll modify it, but then giving them till the next, which wouldn't, I suppose you could get it signed and done by September. Otherwise, it'll go back into formal. Is that enough time for you?
Oh, yes, Dr. Salek, members of the board, I can have that change done within just a few days with authorization, okay. And I can get that out for signature. You just need to instruct how many days you would like, and in the event it's not signed and returned within those days, then we could move it forward move forward with the formal interview at the next meeting.
Okay. So I guess first we'll need the motion. And I'll make the motion to modify consent agreement for 12 months and board staff monitor of PMP per basically monthly. And then that will probably be turned out in the next couple of days. And then the once it's received, is the board okay with allowing 2 weeks for signatures, or does the board want to allow them more time?
2 weeks is fine. Okay. Can this Dr. Buffy all second that motion?
Okay.
Okay, so just to clarify again, this is Justin. So the motion is directing staff to modify the consent agreement to make the restriction period 12 months instead of 6 months, and to add language for monthly monitoring by board staff of the CSPMP. And then to offer that consent agreement as amended to Dr. Porter, and if not signed within 2 weeks, then the board will continue the formal interview at its September meeting.
Correct.
Okay.
And Dr. Papil, you seconded that. So I guess at this point we'll ask Ms. Anthony to do roll call.
Okay. Dr. Sadler?
Aye.
Dr. Popiel?
Aye.
Ms. Tibbetts?
Aye.
Dr. Campbell?
Aye.
Dr. Spatt?
Aye.
And Dr. Rubin is recused. Motion carries.
Okay, let's move on to number 8. And that's review, consideration, possible action regarding application for clinical training. This is Ms. Duffy. And are you on the line?
Dr. Salek, members of the board, if I may, I did speak with the applicant, and she is in class all day, so she will not be able to appear at the meeting. So if I may just do a brief summary, this is application for clinical training of Rain Duffy. Source documents disclosed an incident on 7/30 of 2012, which resulted in an arrest. Applicant was charged with making a false report to law enforcement. The case was dismissed by the court on 9/13/2012. However, applicant failed to disclose this incident on her application for clinical training. Her brief summary of the events was received by board after she was notified of the source document result and asked to supply the response.
Dr. Campbell, probably coming up your alley. Any comments, suggestions?
Thank you. Ultimately, it would be nice to hear from her and have her explain why that wasn't disclosed. And so, if possible, I'd like to make a motion to table this case for the next meeting.
Okay, it's a motion. I'll go ahead. I'll second that.
Okay.
My concern is that it should have been checked, and or you should have checked with board staff to see if it needed to be checked, because board staff could have given her direction.
Exactly.
That's kind of where I'm at, but let's hear back from the rest of the board.
This is Dr. Rubin. I don't understand why you guys, what the premise is for making the motion. Dr. Campbell, can you please restate?
Well, you know, since she's not explaining herself, you know, I thought that it would be important to hear from her reasoning before we made a decision. Of course, it's just throwing that out there.
I mean, but what do you think is the problem? What do you think? You think because she didn't tell us about an incident?
Well, she didn't disclose an incident that she should have on her background report, and ultimately, so that's, you know, the act of omitting information that she should have been upfront about, whether or not she was prosecuted or not. Addressing the philosophy of, you know, past behaviors indicative of future actions and behavior, and, you know, ultimately what we require of physicians, you know, to be upfront and honest about, you know, their documentation. I just thought that maybe we should hear from her and get, you know, some reassurance from her, you know, that we can feel confident about moving forward with approving her application for clinical training, unless you guys see it differently, of course.
Go ahead, Dr. Rubin. Sorry. Go ahead.
Thank you, Ms. Tibbetts. As I was reading this, it appears to me that the reason she didn't report anything is because it didn't seem, based on her response, that she was arrested, that she wasn't charged with anything, and this had nothing, really nothing to do with her, except that she had just been driving a car that somebody else was in, and that she wasn't the one who made a report. And so I'm thinking she was like, there's nothing here, nothing happened, I don't need to report anything. And what I think I'm hearing you say is, hey, you should just be making people aware that if there's anything remote in your history, you should just, that may indeed pop up. It's probably a good idea just to say it. Unless somebody else wants to put their two cents in. I'm not sure that we need to. I mean, to me, it seems like it's all there. But maybe you guys just don't have to, or, go ahead.
Dr. Sadler, this is Karen Tibbett. I was completely satisfied with her explanation. I felt that there was confusion at the scene. She went in to clarify. I don't believe in her mind she felt she was arrested. It doesn't even, I don't know. I was satisfied with her explanation. I can see where the confusion would come in and whether it was something that she even needed to report, because it seemed to her she just went in to clarify and take care of the situation, that there was no, she wasn't charged with anything. And at the time, in her mind, she probably said, I wasn't charged with anything. I wasn't arrested. I'm satisfied, I guess. I don't feel she needs to come back in, but if other people would like to hear from her.
I didn't really look at it from that context. And so I just, you know, I kind of fall back on what, you know, the guidelines were for public safety back in, you know, when I was involved with that. So, what you're saying makes sense. And so I would be, I guess, okay with moving forward.
Mr. Chair, members, this is Justin. I believe there was a motion already made. So I just want to make sure that if there's going to be any subsequent motions, or if Dr. Campbell, I think it was Dr. Campbell's motion, if he wanted to rescind it, I just wanted to remind everyone.
Thank you. Yes, I would like to rescind it. And if possible, I'll make a motion for the board to approve the application for clinical training.
This is Dr. Rubin. I would second that motion.
Any other board discussion? No? Okay, then Gail, can you do roll call?
Yes, Dr. Sadlick?
Aye.
Dr. Popiel?
Aye.
Ms. Tibbetts?
Aye.
Dr. Campbell?
Aye.
Dr. Spatt?
Aye.
Dr. Rubin?
Aye.
Motion carries.
All right, we're on to number 9, review consideration of possible action regarding the draft. So we'll have to take these separately. So let's go with 9A. Any questions on the open session? And that was June 10th. None? Okay, going once, twice. 9B, as in boy, draft minutes of July 8th, open session. Comments, changes, corrections. 9B, everyone wants twice, that's gone. And then future agenda items. Anyone have anything they want?
Mr. Chair, members, you'll need to make a motion.
Oh, yeah.
And, yep.
Sorry about that. We'll need to make a motion. So everyone that agrees with 9A, Gail, can you take the roll call?
Dr. Sadlick, are you making a motion to approve the minutes?
I made the motion.
Okay, is there a second, please?
Is there a second?
I'm sorry, who was that?
Dr. Rubin.
Thank you. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries.
Then let's do 9B. I say we adapt the draft minutes of July 8th.
I move to accept minutes of July 8th. This is Dr. Rubin.
Gail, roll call.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The motion carries.
Future agenda items, anything we need to put on the agenda for September? Nothing? Okay. I'll move on to 11, call to the public, those wishing to address the board. We'll have, it's a 5 minutes. Anybody out there? Once, twice, three times, that's closed. And number 12 is adjournment.
I move to adjourn.
Thank you, everybody.
Hanging in there, appreciate it. Good afternoon.
Too.